I'm here for the free beer.
Wow, you did good in corporate, but you're not so smart.
If we were in Utah, this would be perfectly okay.
This is not going to turn into a Lead Love Fest.
Whiskey won't you waken in? Have some fun while you're here. Do you listen? Do you hear when it's coming?
Hey, everybody. We are live with another edition of Battle Scars, the podcast for entrepreneurs. I hope there's at least three people listening to us, which are the three at the table right here.
And our wives. Oh, wait, never mind.
No,
our families are here.
I heard a guy in a one of the musicians that plays on a stage, and he said we were watching him in a concert where we were all sitting in seats, and he said it's so nice to not be playing to everybody's back.
Yeah.
And I think that here in a bar, you see all the bar stools are with their backs to us. But hey, everybody,
Kristen's taking care of us.
I'm here for the free beer, as always.
So thank you all. My name is Lee Michaels, and I'm here with my old business partner Patrick Callahan.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Yep. And my current business partner Jim O'Donohue.
Hello.
Is that kind of weird? Like you switched wives? It almost. Or
yeah, if we were in Utah, this would be perfectly okay.
Can't edit that out.
Yeah. But what we wanted to do today was we've been doing podcasts with different entrepreneurs, sharing their stories of what it was like to be an entrepreneur with the objective of demystifying it and making it something that somebody can look at it and say, well, I can screw up just like they screwed up.
Yeah.
And so we thought Jim would be the perfect guy to do that with.
Because we screwed up a lot.
So just to give any background to anybody that is potentially paying attention here in the bar, but it's probably very few, we are here at Grain, which is the restaurant that Jim and I created here in Newark 7 years ago, the original location, but I've lost my train of thought.
Well, I got a train of thought.
All right, good.
Get us back on.
Because mine just derailed.
All right, so 7 years ago, and again, this is about battle scars, right? This is all about the problems that we ran
that
into.
That was what I wanted to
talk. Yeah, exactly. So it's okay. About, as entrepreneurs, it's not a straight line, but that's all right. We're going to we'll get us there. And I remember 7 years ago standing in this restaurant at that wall. My son and I were painting it.
Connor, you and Connor were painting.
And I remember you were sending the blinds back. You had a chef.
I totally remember the blinds going back. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And you had a chef sitting on a bucket with his heads in his hand. He lasted a week, I think it was, whatever.
Yeah.
Jim, you were running around like crazy, and you were opening the next day. And now look at you. You have five. How many restaurants? Five.
Five
Grain, six probably on the way or whatever. Your family's sitting here. You're traveling, stuff like that. And that's a short amount of period of time to go from absolutely zero with your head in on a bucket, painting the bathroom, nothing existing, to a full restaurant that's very successful. And then going on there.
I would like to add one bit of commentary there.
Yeah.
My six-year-old daughters were also painting that wall.
That's right. Exactly.
And who did it better?
Yeah, I can't remember how they were.
I think they were painting over what Connor and I painted because we were painting, you're screwed on top of this thing, whatever. But it is like an amazing story to go that quickly from like zero to whatever. And you started out with a vision. I want to dive into like where the vision came from because I think it would be fun for people to hear this who are like from California or from Asia or something like that, to like, how did you guys get together? And then Jim, we're gonna dive into your story,
okay,
of where you started out and all that kind of stuff. But let's paint the picture of where actually this came from, and I think it involves a fire pit somewhere.
As all good ideas do.
Yeah, yeah.
So Lee and I are neighbors. We live across the street from each other, and his kids are a little older than mine, but we were in that era of, you know, when you kind of get trapped at home because you have young kids, you're not running around doing a lot of things because they're going to bed at 8 o'clock at night. So we would regularly get together at a fire pit in Lee's backyard.
So you would leave your kids alone with like the child monitor and stuff like that. Well, walk across where the beer was.
We could see the monitors.
We could see the monitor.
Okay, good, yeah.
So we would always talk about how much more fun it would be if we had somewhere that we could go out as adults with a family and go to a cool spot. Not Chuck E. Cheese. Sorry, I'm not
that there's anything wrong with Chuck E. Cheese.
They're not a sponsor.
I'm not picking on Chuck E. Cheese, but setting the mindset of how we were thinking. More of a, we would love to go out and have a good IPA, enjoy a really good sandwich, and have our families with us and celebrate being out in public together.
And at this point in time, as you're coming up and saying this is what's needed, you're obviously an experienced restaurateur at that point in time. Is
not
that
at all.
All right.
From the consumer perspective.
Yes. Yes. Had I been to many? Absolutely.
Well, okay. But you did have restaurant experience.
I did. So in college and a little bit after college, I had worked in restaurants at the University of Delaware. I had worked in restaurants at Dewey Beach. And more than just bartending and waiting tables, I had helped set up a point of sale system. I had done some management. Then I took, 20 years off.
Yeah. It sounds like what you told Lee, but may not be true. Or maybe. So at this point, let me just ask the question. How old are you at this point? Like, what are you 20s and that kind of stuff when you guys are starting meeting at the...
At the fire pit? Oh, I'm...
We're 40s.
Yeah, I'm late 30s.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're working where? Like, what are you doing to make a living?
I was working in the credit card industry in Delaware. Mm. I had worked for a couple different banks.
Safe job, paying tons of money.
Yeah, I was doing great.
Good benefits.
I was very happy with how my career was going.
Yeah.
And then, you have a couple beers and your best friend says, let me tell you something.
I have an idea.
I got an idea.
And, throw all that away.
And being part of his wife at that point from a business perspective, that's when I checked out.
Smart man.
All right. And then, so you're sitting on there and he's like, I've always had this dream. And you said, yeah. Tell us about that moment.
Yeah, so we talked about it a lot. And then the time would seem to be the right time to do it. Lee had left his business. Mm-hmm. I was really unhappy with the way, not my career was going, but with how the industry was going. And so our joking and talking about all the things we could do and how we should do this turned into, well, let's put a pen to paper.
Let's put a what?
A pen to paper.
Okay.
Like, let's start writing down what we're talking about. Because it was beers at a fire pit for a long time. And then the minute you start putting a pen to paper and writing down, say, well, we would do this. And you know what? We would do this. And how would we achieve this? And so we start actually writing out the ideas of what we were talking about. And
pictures coming to life.
Exactly. And yeah. And then it very quickly, after we started writing it down, it became, all right, how do we actually make this happen?
Yeah.
And it was the most disheartening moment of both of our restaurant careers. I don't know about anything before this, but we put a bid in on a place and we didn't get it.
Wait, how did that come about? Did you start searching for places you could do it for?
We did. As we were writing down what we wanted, there was one that... This sounds terrible, but we put it on a death watch. It wasn't going well. It's a place that we tried to frequent, and we stopped enjoying because it just wasn't going well. And so we said, you know what? That would be a great place for us to start if it doesn't make it.
Right.
And we started keeping a very close eye on it. And sure enough, the doors closed.
Yeah.
And so we found out who was running it or who owned it. And we got into the bid process. Actually, we got in very early, probably before a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then a very established company came in right over the top of us.
Yeah.
And we lost.
And then I'm sure you had the probably $50, $60 million in the bank that you could do nothing, whatever. Yes. You have a wife who was very supportive. It was like pushing you out, saying, you should do this.
The wives were supportive, though. Really? I will say that.
Kathy's probably thinking, like, here we go again.
Yeah, and I know the kids were like, the guys are going to get rid of our college fund. But they were very supportive, and I think they challenged us to make sure we were serious in our approach.
And did the mindset start out as like, I'm going to have five restaurants, or we're just going to start out with one and see what happens with it? Or
so that's part of a very real conversation that I think everybody who wants to start a business should have. So I was very fortunate to have a partner. Some people are doing it alone, but you've got to set that goal for yourself. Mm-hmm. So Lee and I talk about it, right or wrong, as we never wanted to buy ourselves a job. Right. We weren't trying to open a restaurant to be restaurant managers. We wanted to open a business.
Right.
And so we wanted to be business managers and hire people to work in the restaurants. And that's a very different mindset. You hear all these statistics about how restaurants fail all the time. And that's usually an individual operator, a chef, somebody who may have managed a restaurant, deciding that they want to go out on their own. We didn't, like, I'm too old. When we started this, I was way too old to be here at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
So our goal was always to build a business.
A growth.
Instead of a job.
Yeah.
if I wanted a job, I had one.
All right, so talk to me. Let's go back to the moment of when you actually left the bank. Because word on the street was like, he did what? Because we were still working in the banking business and stuff like that. And like, wait, he went where? Tell me the day off. Like, and what were you thinking?
I will never forget. I'll use his first name. My boss, Eric, great guy. We got along great. I go in, I said, hey, listen, I've decided to open a business with a great friend. I'm going to put in my resignation. And at that time, they had already laid some people off. It was just after the financial crisis of 2000.
Which one?
I'm trying to think. So it started in 2009. I think it was over by 2012. Yeah. I was done with it in 2014. So around then. He's like, well, what are you doing? And like, he was very interested. Yeah. And the minute I said, yeah, I think we're going to open a restaurant, it was interesting to see how the look on his face changed. And
he's really not that bright as I thought he was.
He's like, wow, you did good in corporate, but you're not so smart. Yeah. No, it was actually a very positive conversation. It's funny how many people, as I was doing what I was doing, were saying, are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
And you know what they're really asking? They're really asking, God, I wish I was you right now.
Well, go ahead. They had like a party. His group that he left from the bank, they had a party here, and they gave you an award. It was like Hulk Award.
They gave me the Hulk Award, which is the ability to break things and come out on the other side perfectly fine.
That's fantastic. Wow.
So he had a lot of support.
Yeah. So, again, a bunch of great people, but, you know, you get in that corporate mindset where the money's good, the benefits are good. You get caught up in it.
Yeah.
And most entrepreneurs, when they are starting, are not, you're not making corporate money. I'd been in corporate for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I knew I was leaving to make less money.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't set themselves up for that. And it's his fault. I'm pointing at Lee right now for those of you who can't see.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed living across the street from Lee and some of our other neighbors. So we didn't buy the big house. We didn't buy the fancy cars. We enjoyed where we were. And having that flexibility of not having to live paycheck to paycheck and needing every dollar really allowed us to make some decisions that we may not have been able to if I didn't like live next to this guy.
Yeah. So during that time, did you have, and I don't want to fast forward to the end because we're going to talk a lot about other things in between, but did you have what was the biggest perception that you, like, if I go back to Jim 7 years ago and you're like, all right, here's the path we're going to go on. What were some of the biggest things that have been completely wrong? And you can start out with Lee. That's fine.
We'll leave Lee out of this. I thought I would have a lot more free time. Yeah. We were just talking about that before the show.
Yeah.
When you start something like this, you think you'll be making decisions and everything will go fine.
Yeah.
But then you start bringing in people who know a lot more than you do, and the decisions start changing.
Yeah.
And you've got to instantly open your mind to, all right, I'm not right, even though it's my business and I'm the boss. Because coming from corporate America, you would make a decision and then they would do it, and right or wrong, it's how it went.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, this is my business, and if I'm not willing to listen to the people that are involved, we're going to miss out on an awful lot.
Yeah. It doesn't matter who's right or wrong at this point. It's your checkbook.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so if the guy who's working for you is smarter, you're going to take that. You don't really care who's actually perceiving that as right or wrong. Yeah.
And it's just a very different environment when you're on your own.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be willing to say, okay, he knows what he's doing. That's why I hired him. And I got to let him do it.
Yeah.
I think one of the big changes, like, I was an entrepreneur before with you, Patrick, and the big change coming here was you were dealing with people of all manner of society, as employees, as guests, as vendors and stuff like that. And we didn't really have that. You probably didn't have that in corporate America. There wasn't a lot of that. Like, you were dealing with companies. You were dealing with a specific marketing group in a company. We're here, we're dealing with people that, you know, this is their livelihood and living paycheck to paycheck. And we had a big, huge, awesome responsibility with that. And I know we did it at Archer, but here it felt like we were really impacting people's lives in a way that I felt we had a real responsibility. That was something that was a change for me.
And I guess that became more apparent because you predicted the pandemic happening, because that's a great time to do it. But yeah, hand to mouth, right? Like, I think that was...
Yeah, there was some... some insurance company, they were on a podcast talking about things, and they said the average person can't support an incident that occurred, like a bank account issue that's over $400. So if they need new tires, if they need new, it was a auto insurance. And that's why they have insurance, and that's why you have like a $250 deductible, whatever, because it said the average person can't afford, you know, $400 hit to their change of life. And I, you know, for us, that was definitely an adjustment for me. I don't know how it was for you.
Absolutely. So working in banks in Delaware, you've got a very seasoned group of people. I think it was, who was it who we said, what governor was it that changed the banking rules? I'm drawing a blank.
Pete DuPont.
Pete DuPont changed the rules a long time ago. You have a lot of seasoned veterans in the corporate world. And then we open this and we're dealing with, you know, late teens, early 20s, people who are just either out of college, still in college, just trying to make their way. And it, to Lee's point, it's a very different world when, you know, they actually have to worry about every paycheck, and they have to worry about how are they going to handle the blown tires. And it makes it exciting. I think it's a great thing to deal with all these kids as they're coming into it. Yeah. We've learned a lot. We have found ways to help, and I think that's one of the things that has made us a very positive employer for a lot of people in this industry. But yeah, it's made it exciting.
Yeah, awesome.
I can't tell you the number of times that Jim had to sit down with one of our employees when they realized that their credit was shit. And and Jim came from the banking world and knew all this stuff, and he was able to look at that and say, well, have you pulled your credit report? Let's sit down and look at it. And he would say, well, you got to just go pay that bill. Like, that's an old bill. Go pay it, and things will be better. And
some things that a lot of people don't realize, but like, it would be a $15 bill that, you know, they left $15 on their Amex when they closed it and didn't realize it. Well, the $15 charged off. And so it's destroying their credit because they didn't realize it. But if they just gave Amex $15, they'd be fine.
Yeah.
Maybe you should be giving me advice.
But I think that in terms of the biggest change for me was even coming from another company, coming to this, was that we're dealing with a lot of life issues.
Yeah.
And to see Jim leverage his corporate background in that way to say, look, I can help you through this. I'm not paying that $15 bill, but you got to go pay that.
Yeah.
I want to bring you a story. It was, I think it was a Thursday around noon. It was a cold day or whatever, and I'm cutting through to get some lunch. I just returned from California, coming back, whatever. But I'm coming through this food hall, and I run into you and your wives at the food hall.
I totally remember this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And just left the lawyer's office.
Yes.
Okay, good. It was, I could see there was both excitement and there was a like, oh, crap, that kind of thing. And
that was just because we saw you.
Yeah. Thank you. And I knew it was a moment. Like, you guys were both giddy with your wives at the same time, but as like scared as anything. And it was like, I don't want to be in this position, but I'm in this position. It's going to be a lot of fun kind of thing. And you'd been through it before.
And so had Kathy.
And it's a moment. Like, right? It's a moment you celebrate. It's a moment that you're scared. It's a moment like you're going to jump off the cliff and, you know, hopefully there's water at the bottom type of thing. Jim, tell me about what was going on that day. And like, what did it feel like?
So I'll give you a little background. So we had decided to expand.
From what to what? Like, is your first restaurant to a second, or is it?
It was the second and the third, right?
It was one to, supposed to be two, but ended up being two and three.
Two and three.
Yeah.
So
surprise.
Newark was going great. We had done, like, Lee and I were spending a lot of time here, getting our processes in place. A year and a half into it, we felt like we had something. Like, it was going well. We had hired people. We were finally able to stop working here every day, which was our goal, because our goal was to build the company. And so one opportunity came up, and we took it. And then literally, it was a week later.
Yeah.
A second one, we got a phone call and said, hey, I think you guys would be a great fit here. Do you want to do this too? And we... Don't ever do this. We said yes.
And once you say yes, you never go back.
You
right?
never go back.
But we had also, we've been chasing another one for a long time, and right. we've been building the business to support that one. Because like Jim said, we were trying to build the business to support all of us, not have Jim and I working in the restaurant the whole time. So we had been adding infrastructure, adding costs to try and go to that second location. The second location fell apart. And so then we were on a mad hunt to fill that revenue hole that we then had.
Well, we had salaries we were paying
yeah.
that we didn't have a job for.
Right. Because
trying to not say what or who, but it fell through.
Yeah. Wow.
But then one came up. We're very excited about the one. And then a week later, a second one came up that was a rare opportunity. And if we said no, it wasn't going to come back up again. So we said yes to both. And the day we saw you, we had just closed on the loans.
With the banks.
With the banks to make the two of them happy. And the wives are involved. There's personal guarantees involved. There's an awful lot of paper being signed. And for someone like Katie and I, who had not been through this before, it was a very stressful day.
Did you have to talk about it the night before? Or?
I'm laughing because I think we talked about it weeks before, and even on the day of, she still was not happy with me.
Yeah,
that shouldn't say not happy with me. She's all in. She understood what we were doing, and when Lee and I sit down with Katie and Kathy to talk about the business, because Katie and Kathy help, but they don't work on it as much as we do, I get excited to explain it to them.
Yeah.
Because we're proud of what we're doing.
They're your board of directors.
They are. Yeah. They are. And yeah. They are as honest as it gets.
Yeah.
And so I'm proud. Lee's proud. Like we feel like we're doing a great thing, building this business that's really enjoyed in the community. We employ a lot of people. But when you got to sit down to your wife and talk about it, that's a whole different level of detail.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Katie had been through this with us. But to actually have to take her to a lawyer's office, and you're signing just pages and pages of documents. And so we took them out to lunch afterwards, and that's when we ran into you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I saw it. I was like, I know exactly what's going on right here. And I'll tell you, and Jim, and you probably appreciate this about Lee, and this won't be a become a Lee love fest, because I know you would love that, and I won't do that. But one of the things he always said was like, the relationship with the bankers is one of the most things. And you spend months building that relationship with them. You treat them like they're Catholic priests, so you tell them your sins and you're like that. Maybe not at all of them, but pretty much so. All that moment of all that relationship building for the previous 6 months of getting the trust of the banks pays off in that moment when you're sitting there on a Thursday at lunch 100%. Signing those things. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But this is not going to turn to a Lee love fest, but I give him this compliment all the time. Him having his entrepreneurial experience long before I did was such a big help, and the relationships is what he thrives on.
Yeah.
And so he'll call our banker just to check in.
Yeah.
And I always say he makes the phone call, which is something every entrepreneur should do. Whether you think you should or you shouldn't, you should. He'll call the vendor we like the least but we need. He'll call, check in, how you doing? And then we'll laugh afterwards about how annoying the phone call was. But
not that there are any vendors of that.
They're all perfect. But making that phone call ahead of time, because I came from corporate. I needed something from a legal department. I sent a document off, and it came back reviewed by legal.
Yeah.
Well, now we need an attorney that we have to be able to talk to. But we want him to take our call. But if you only call him when you need things, or her, it's a very different relationship.
Yeah.
But Lee's always great on calling people and saying, hey, just want you to know, nothing for you to do, but we've decided to open a new restaurant. We'd love for you to come see it. And building that relationship through phone calls so that when you need
start out with shots.
Yes.
Well, and just to give you credit, I think you did the same thing. I remember sitting at the end of the podcast or after one was over, and you had a call coming in. You looked at it, and you're like, oh, man, I got to take this. I step out. And it was like a lawyer who didn't get their bill, not because you couldn't pay it, but just said they didn't get it. But for me, I'm like, oh, I don't want to take that one. But you got to, right?
You have
as an entrepreneur.
You've got to take the call. And that's my biggest compliment to Lee is he always either takes the call or makes the call.
Yeah.
So that when you get into that relationship situation where, you know, things may not be going your way and you need some help, if you've built a relationship with that business partner outside of a problem, it just makes it that much better because they're like, all right, I like you guys. We're friends. I'm going to help.
Was there a moment of distribution all right, you're going to focus on this and I'm going to focus on this? Or
I think initially we both focused on everything, but I think my marketing background had me focusing on that side of it, and Jim's financial background had him focusing on the financial stuff. And I think it's kind of morphed into, I don't want to say it this way too seriously, but like I focus on the top line, getting more, how do we get more revenue in the door? And Jim focuses on the bottom line, like how do we make sure we're making money on that revenue? We're both talking about costs. We're both talking about increasing revenue. We both want to do both. But I think that we've been able to understand each other that way. And I think We've definitely had difficult conversations where we've conflicted with each other.
Oh, and you guys are just like all happy all the time.
But I think just to switch this to a little bit of a Jim love fest, what I love about Jim is he doesn't let it fester. So if there's an issue, it doesn't sort of linger and then, you know, become a long seated thing. He'll just stop me and say, well, why the hell are you doing this?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of created that attitude that we have with each other, that if I don't like what's happening, I'm going to go over and explain to you why I don't like it. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to tell me why I'm wrong, but we're going to not let this fester. Yeah. And I think that in a business, you have to be focused on what's the right thing for the business to get it to the next day, to get it to position it for what's better, not to prove that you're right or to prove that you, or to address some long wrong. And I think by, you know, Jim's constant sort of in your face when you're really angry at him and you can't figure out why. And he's just saying, why are you being an asshole right now?
Yeah.
Like that helps you kind of understand, well, this is why.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go on. It doesn't linger. And I think that's important because I think that as entrepreneurs, it's not that you're fighting a lot of other people, but you've got a lot of other challenges and you've got to approach each day knowing that you've got somebody by your side, somebody in your foxhole that's going to be fighting these the same way. And we always used to say that we can argue with each other all we want inside the office, but the second we leave that office, we're in agreement. Like you and me had this at Archer, and I had this at the business before, which kind of really influenced me, scarred me that way, was we can't have the rest of the team saying, well, what did mom say? What did dad say? Kind of thing, you know, or how can I get a better answer?
I'm sure you remember that.
And in this business, there's 100 decisions every day of do I have to do this or not. I will even know that when I get this call from somebody that usually calls Jim, it's because they don't want the answer that Jim's going to give them. So I know that I have to be ready to give them the answer that Jim would have given them because they're calling me instead. But I think it's important that we can't have people questioning, is there strife between the owners? Is there, you know, are there questions?
Yeah. Another question on the corporate background, whatever. I remember starting the new company. If I would have hired someone right out of one of these big companies to come in as an entrepreneur, it would have been, or come in to work for me as a very small startup, it would have been like, all right, let's design this SOP and let's get the TPS reports all set up and everything else like that. Did you face that? Like, or did you fight the, or did Lee actually sit down with you at times to like, this is corporate, you can't do it, or did that help her? You know, so what I'm asking with that?
I think I totally get it. So to answer your question, yes on both sides. So yes, I came in from such a controlled background where I was trying to implement all of the things that I learned in corporate. But the difference was, like I talked about legal before, there was nobody to submit a legal request to.
Yeah. You were like, our legal department. Yeah,
like, you actually were our legal department.
That's scary.
but I think the structure, I think everybody should have to work in corporate for a little bit. Because you learn so much about structure and about detail and about how things can be, but leaving that world and
thank you, sir,
being able to start designing stuff on our own, it was just a very different experience. We didn't need the TPS report. And quite honestly, corporate doesn't need the TPS report. And so being able to move from doing things because you had to doing things because it's the right thing that's going to grow your business was just such a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
And Lee was great. Sometimes I'd ask for the TPS report, and he's like, I'm going to beat you with a TPS report. If you ask for one more, we don't need them. And so it forced me to very quickly change my mindset from what I had learned and how I thought things should be, but to how things were actually going to work faster.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you ever have to beat him over the head saying, take that back to the bank? That's not happening.
He may have hit me with a TPS report too.
No, but I do think Jim and I had a respect for each other, as did you and I, although you and I didn't know each other as well as Pat, or as Jim and I knew each other before starting the business. But I think that you can't just say, I'm right and you're wrong. You have to say, I believe this is the right direction and why, and have the other person justify their position. And again, come up with the right answer, and then we're both in supporting of that direction.
Yeah.
And I think that entrepreneurs sometimes will get into an issue where one has to be right and one has to be wrong in order to prove that they're the bigger entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Or they have the, you know, whatever it is. And I think that by being focused on what's the overall benefit to the business, what's the right thing, And sometimes it might be you feel really strongly you're right, but you're not going to. It's not a battle. It's not a hill worth dying on.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so I know there's times that I've presented T-shirts to Jim and say, we want to do this T-shirt. And he's like, yeah, all right. And I could either spend, we could either spend 3 hours fighting this, or we could just say, okay. And if it fails, then he's got a victory, and, you know, and then we learn from it. But like nothing's
gained. But the revenues don't, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I love the fact that we will do, to the battle scars point, we'll do 7 or 8 things wrong to get 2 or 3 right.
Yeah. You just got to do it fast, right?
Yep. But normally when we get them right, there's a lot of benefit to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we'll have to make a few ugly T-shirts to get the one that works.
Yeah.
Or what was the football menu we came up with that was terrible?
The tailgate party.
The tailgate party.
Yes.
And like we're just... Like, the beauty of this business is, and this is getting to maybe your data background, is at Archer, we would try to focus on a market, we'd try to focus on something, and we wouldn't know for months whether we're right or not. We'll try the tailgate party menu here on a Sunday, and we'll realize by Sunday afternoon that this isn't working.
Yeah.
And the data is really strong, and Jim's been able to dig into that data, and we invested in systems that gave us more data, because the data's there, it's just making sure that you're willing to look at it. And we could see whether this makes sense or not. Not just did the dollars work, but did these products move? Did they? We did a prime rib dinner in one of the locations, and everybody loved it and raved about it, but we didn't make any money on it. And Jim was able to look in the data and say, this is a success if you're a guest, but we're not going to stay in business if this is all we do.
All right.
Yeah, and so. That is one of my favorite things about the quick turnaround in this business is we will have people come up to us and be like, oh, my God, it was awesome. We sold so much. And then we'll pull up the data because we have it real time. And we'll pull up the data and be like, so they sold 7. Like, it might have felt like a lot in the middle of the chaos, but you sold 7.
I'm curious, like, what traditions you guys have started now. Like, Lee and I, when you and I were business together, we would always, like, go to the whiteboard when it became a moment. And when we said go to the whiteboard, it being like, we're going to map out the future year from now. And I'm curious, like, now, what traditions do you have? You guys are going to out of the country. Seems like you do that once a year. I mean, what do you...
We go to Conference Room G a lot.
Yes.
All right, what is that?
We have nicknamed Grottos, Conference Room G. So our wives have access...
It's a pizza store down the street, by the way, yeah.
Our wives have access to our calendar. So if they're like, can you help me with this at home or whatever, they can see where we are, what we're going to do. So we, rather than saying we're going to Grottos, we said we have a meeting in Conference Room G.
And what is that all about? Does that mean that it's going to be a stressful meeting, or does it mean it's...
No, we're going to go have lunch and drink a beer.
And talk about the future.
But we sat down and we went over like the numbers for how we did brunch and what were the costs and what were the sales and what are the things we're going to bring forward. And so we'll have like some paperwork that we'll go through, and then there's beers that we're working through them with.
Yeah,
it's a good change of scenery.
Actually scheduling some time for us to go hang out and talk about the business where if there's not people calling us, there's not vendors looking for us. It's just where we go sit down, have a little bit of lunch, and we talk about what we're thinking of whatever our big problem is or what our next thing is, or and hash that over beers, kind of like we did it in the... It's the new fire pit.
It's the new Conference Room G. Watch out, Grottos. It might be on fire. Someday, right? That's pretty cool. Yeah. Other traditions that you like, you guys have embraced, that is, or maybe something you brought over from corporate life that really changed you?
Not from corporate life, but I do love... We do try and get away together as a group with our families as part of... Owning a business, you are required to have an annual meeting.
Oh, yeah.
So that's cool. we try and celebrate our annual meeting where we're talking about the business. And we will, this year we're going to Puerto Rico for Christmas.
You guys must have racked up a lot of Amex points to be able to do this.
A lot. I think you paid for the whole thing.
Yeah.
But we will. As we're there having our annual meeting, we'll talk to our wives about what we're thinking. And hopefully they're a little happier in Puerto Rico than they are here. But our kids will be there. We'll celebrate, but then we will leave with a documented meeting and plan for what we're thinking about for the next year or so.
It needs to be a tax write-off somehow or another.
I don't know about that. It might be, Patrick.
I want to go one last question for me or whatever, but going back to your corporate background, then you come forward to today, what would you tell that self who's about to, who steps into his office of your boss and says, I'm about to leave, what would you say differently? Like, hey, don't forget to, about this.
Wow.
Or the perception is not going to be reality or whatever it might be. There's somebody sitting in a corporation somewhere who's been dying to start a restaurant or dying to take a totally different mechanism. You just lived through 7 years of that right now. And you're sitting there telling them that, like, don't give up this. Don't give up that thought that you did. Do the jump. Have this prepared. Everything you thought, you know, those type of things. What would be the one thing, like?
I would say take everything that working in corporate America has taught you. Because now I'm speaking specifically on the banking industry because that's all I was ever in. But they do teach you some really good habits. Don't give those up. And make a really good plan on what you want to do. Don't think you're just going to, I'm going to quit tomorrow. I'm going to open a woodworking business and it's going to be successful. You got to come up with a plan. You got to put some numbers together to make sure it's going to work. I will say working in corporate teaches you a lot about how to make a plan because they're going to fight you for every dollar and how do you spend. Be honest with yourself. And if woodworking is what you want to do because it's your passion, figure out how you're going to make money off of it. Because when we first started, we talked about how do we pay ourselves. And Lee was adamant about the fact we got to figure out how to pay ourselves. Because if we can't pay ourselves, then this business is not going to work. Yeah. So if you're opening that woodworking business, if you're opening a business leaving corporate, you've got to include your salary. Because I've heard a couple people, we've met with a couple of people I used to work with. And they say, well, I'm not going to pay myself for the first year. And I'm like, well, who's going to pay your mortgage?
Yeah. And how do you know if it's a viable business?
Yeah. You can't afford that. You can't pay yourself. Like, and it seems a little weird like to even think about that. But you've got to figure out how to pay yourself. And in corporate America, it just, it's all there for you and it's done. But you've got to put it down on paper. You've got to say, that, all right, I'm going to sell 20 of these a month. And I'm going to charge this much for it, and I'm going to be able to pay myself this month. And it doesn't have to be huge at the beginning, but you got to have a plan to sustain your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will say, like, I had had enough of corporate. It doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It just wasn't for me anymore. But, man, if you're an entrepreneur and you're sitting there in that chair and you're thinking about it, you got to find a way to do it. I probably took way too long. It took Lee dragging me out, kicking and screaming, and my wife being very supportive, but... Man, 2 months afterwards, I realized that I had made the right decision.
Yeah.
And I'll say that Jim and I and you as well, we do a lot with the Horn program, and we talk with these students that are in college and looking at possibly for the first time, like they're going through entrepreneurship. And to them, corporate is a bad thing. And it's not a bad thing. I could think corporate America taught us a lot of good habits.
Absolutely.
And good habits that transfer. And I can't tell you the number of times that Jim and I have done something, not because we learned it here, but because we learned it from a past corporate life. And you'd say, well, what does banking have to do with the restaurant industry? Or what is, you know, for me, it was selling engineering supplies, basically, like, you know, instrumentation. Like, what does that have to do? But those companies teach you how to do a meeting, how to do a memo, how to learn Excel, how to
hold people accountable.
Yeah. And I think those are things that, so I think if you're in corporate America and you're saying this isn't for me, I still think you should try to say, how do I get the most out of this? Mm-hmm. How do I participate in as much as I can? When I was at Leeds and Northrop and I was the young guy that I say I was the cheap guy so they could put me in these different talents. Like I got exposed to a lot of different things that I still lean on today. And so being in corporate America gives you those skills that helps you run a business.
Yeah.
And I think those are key because we came to this and Jim knew a lot about setting up a restaurant necessarily, setting up a bar. But, you know, we've never run a restaurant before. And we've never cooked anything before, and we never got a permit for a building before. But you know, we knew there was a process. Like we approached it as here's a business problem, and we've learned how to solve it. And I think those are very meaningful lessons that if you have to spend 5 years in corporate America to, you know, get the most out of it, and then make that jump. Like don't view that you've failed if you want to be an entrepreneur, but you're spending the first 5 or 6 years pursuing some domain expertise.
Yeah. And you know, some of the other things I think about, because, you know, I came from that world initially as well when I worked at, it was at Anderson or Accenture. That corporate America that we say is like, oh, that's corporate, this is entrepreneur, it started somewhere, right?
True.
So absolutely. It was like a very, very beginning. And then it developed into a big place with process. that then you're the other end of that process. And you guys have five restaurants. I mean, there could be someone who's saying
some
like,
of that process is good.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Even though you hated it.
And it got you.
We use so much, and I'll use MBNA as an example. I think I'm allowed to say their name.
Yeah.
But so many of the things that I still reference are things that I learned at MBNA.
And that started with two people at a table figuring, at a fire pit. Saying, like, let's give this a shot that ended up being a multinational organization, which could be the same way. So, you know, corporate is the end result of something that we might all be chasing in some way, you know? And we got to experience what that ultimate vision was, and then we step back and, like, this is where it starts.
And Patrick, I'll even add another level to that. So we keep saying corporate, but maybe you go work for a bigger mom-and-pop shop. So maybe there's 150, 200 people there. But you're there and you're learning.
Like
they built a 150, 200-person company.
Yeah.
Pay attention. Listen to what they're doing. And if you disagree, that's okay. But there's a lot to be learned there.
And you're the lucky one because you're learning on their dime.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And so,
right.
Yes, you're giving them what they need. But you should be soaking all that in and saying, you know what? I'm going to walk out of here in a year from now and open my own business. Well, how much can you learn while you're there? And that's not a bad thing. You're not stealing. You're giving them your time. You're giving them your value. And so take what you can get as well.
Yep. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a 5,000-person corporation. It could be a 100-person, quote-unquote, mom-and-pop shop, but they've done something to get to 100 people, so they've got some value for you to learn.
Yeah. Well, this has been awesome. I mean, I don't know if you have any other things that you wanted to dive into.
You kind of took the wheel tonight, and I love it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you can't ask him questions because, you know, he's your business partner, he's your wife now. But this has been really good. And I think even me, it gets me excited to hear some of the things that you jumped off from to do it. And that was a big moment. That's
huge.
Scary. And I'm sure Katie's like, what the? I can't. Yeah, whatever. But tribute to you, to Lee, to keeping entrepreneur stuff going, and then to our wives who are sitting in the bar and running friends around and stuff like that. So it's cool.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm sure the crowd's going to go crazy right now.
Well, this is our first one at Grain, and we got beers flowing freely. Yeah. That was one positive of it.
But I do think, like, I enjoy the live environment of it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So Lee and I have been talking about doing podcasts live, and I just think, especially if we start working this into a schedule where people know that there's a podcast coming that they're interested in, I think this could be a thing.
Absolutely. And this is why we come to a restaurant to hear the outside noise. Otherwise, we just want to sit at home too.
Right.
And there's something I do want to end off the podcast about Grain with. And you talked about some of the – I remember when you both first started this restaurant, you talked about, like, the entrepreneurial spirit coming through here. I don't know, Lee, can you just end us off with, like, a little bit about why that's, how that was part of the input of Grain or the brand? Or did I dream that up?
No. In the logo, in the logo is Oliver Evans, and he was documented, he was recognized as one of America's 50 greatest inventors, and he was from here in Delaware, and he invented the world's first car in 1805, and we just fell in love with the guy here in Delaware. He had patent number 3 from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for a mill that took a family business that required 10 people, took it to one person. When they built the Erie Canal, pretty much every mill on that Erie Canal used his technology. And he's right here in Delaware.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to celebrate that. We felt like his energy, his quirkiness, we wanted to celebrate Delaware when we built our brand. And I think that was something that we now have signs on the doors that say Blue Hen Built. You know, because Jim and I both went to UD, and we want, like, Delaware is a small state, but Delaware's accomplished some really great things, and so we want to make that part of our brand and celebrate that and let people kind of rally around that.
And he was Delaware's first entrepreneur, in 1805.
And you discussed this before this building was even occupied, and which has gone through the brand, which has gone through everything that's put on the table and all kind of stuff. So when all these podcasts become the most number one podcasts in America, you got to come back to this restaurant and see where it was all started. So, yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks, Jim, for making
you, Patrick,
the time.
Thank you for having us.
This was fun. All right. Well, I'm going to press this big red button again.
The big red button.